Good morning.
Good morning. This is the 7th of May, 1979, Santa Fe, New Mexico, and we're having a session with Bartholomew.
I feel that I would like to speak a little longer, a little more extensively, if I might, on the subject of how a human can become free and how one of the ways that you can observe the trap that you have placed yourself in is by your observation of your interest in the world around you. I've stated earlier that the reason that, although you know there is such a state of freedom, you have been told, you've read it in the books, I have said it, others have said it, all the great avatars have been very clear upon this, but there is a state of freedom that you can attain if you so desire, then why is it, with all this knowledge, that one is not constantly then in a state of becoming free and doing it quickly? Well, the frank statement is, of course, that you're not interested in it enough to have it come into being. And the reason that you're not interested enough is that you are interested in the world. Now, when I say interested in the world, I mean simply that. For example, as you are moving through your day, you have choices to make. You're busy doing your work, of course. But there is a certain way that one can do the work, and in so doing it that way will be detached from the outcome of it, the pleasures and the pains of it. The entire work situation will be greatly enhanced. It will be carried out with much greater ability and precision if one is in this state of detachment. But in fact, if you are being very honest, you will realize that that is not what you want. All of you who say you don't like your jobs and so on, well, I think that much of the reason that you are still in the job that you don't like is because there is a certain attentiveness there, a certain relationship between you and your work that really does please you. It happens constantly, and if you're paying close attention, you will become more and more free of this. For example, when two people are talking and you're not involved in it, and you walk into the room, what do you do? Do you say, what would you tell me what happens? Are you interested? Or do you simply drop it? You go through and you see a newspaper, and do you pick it up and do you read it? Or do you just drop it? You go by the television set and a fantasy drama is on. Do you stop and watch it, or do you drop it? In other words, if you were paying close attention to your own patterns, you'll realize that you are very much involved with what goes on in the world. It happens even in the minute realms of your own mind as you sit quietly within your room. What are you dwelling upon? Are you dwelling on the things that are going to set you free? Or are you dwelling on the things that are going to entrap you more and more? Now, those of you, again, we go back to those of you who are parents or those of you that are lovers and so on. The same thing is true. Are you fantasizing with how to please your mate or how to discipline your children? Or what are you really dealing with in the mind substance? It tells all, this mind substance, the things that you choose to bring into focus. As you have been told, and I would like to state again, you have an incredible choice of vast areas of consciousness to pull from. Some of those areas of consciousness carry in them what I would call the seed awakening of your freedom. And they are also in the area of consciousness. You will not awaken in the area of consciousness. That is not where your freedom lies. You must step out of consciousness, in a sense, and be an observer of it in order to be free. But nevertheless, within the great river of consciousness, there have been seeds placed very carefully, not only by the great ones of history, but even by the very mediocre seekers of history have all combined to do this service for mankind. And so when you decide to really immerse yourself into this process of your own freedom, as you begin to immerse yourself and keep your mind carefully pitched, carefully honed, carefully tracking on the desire for freedom, out of this sea of consciousness, you will then begin to draw those bands of energy, those bands of past that represent the struggle for freedom among the human entity. Now, in order to better understand this, let us deal in terms of consciousness, this river that I choose to call this river of consciousness. All of the thoughts, past, present, thoughts of mankind, all of those have come for eons before, however long you want to think in terms of man, all of that has come into being in some way in the world of consciousness, and they all move together, undulating together, making various patterns, and they all continue their own limited life, is what I would call it. And all of these thoughts, the ones that have power, last longer, the ones that have very little power, take some shape, form, and then later dissolve into the nothingness of the river. But when you speak in terms of a consciousness of mankind, these terms are really what we're speaking of. When you speak in terms of there is a mutuality of consciousness that humans are able to tap into, really what we're talking about is this river of consciousness that continually flows. Now, it is not something that moves you. It is rather something that you, as the aware observer, choose to participate in. And it is the illusion, if you want to speak of the fall, then the fall was when those who were observing the flow of consciousness that they had helped to create had forgotten that they had helped to create it and were standing outside of it and could observe it, and they, shall we say, fell into this river and thereby lost their foothold on the grounding of the one God and now find themselves awash in this sea of consciousness, this river ever moving, going really nowhere. And they are not then able to identify themselves with the bank, with the solidity of the bank and the observer upon the bank, but rather are awash and moving with the currents and the eddies and the dangers and the drowning of the life of the river. Now, many of you are what I would call participants in life in the sense that you absolutely enjoy this experience of being in this river. And I would say to those of you, go on by all means. If that is what is meaningful, if the world is meaningful to you in the sense that you would like to continue to change the flow of the river, to change the makeup of the particles of the water, to have it take this form and that form, to dissolve this rock and to move this other obstacle, by all means, go right ahead. I really know that that is a state of awareness that has to be gone through. And I would wish you all good fortune with it and go right ahead. However, that is really not the kind of interest that I am attuned to, because there are many people who can tell you how to live a better life within the river. And there are certain rules that if you know the eddies and the flows and if you know the obstacles and so on, then to a certain extent you are certainly able to control your life in that river and the movement that you make as you proceed down to the ends of the river. The trick is, of course, and I would say this with all due humility, there is no real end to the river, and that is not where your freedom lies. The assumption is that if you stay in the river and flow with it long enough, it of its own accord will open up into the great sea of consciousness, of conscious super consciousness, or God consciousness, or liberation, and so on, and therefore you will just naturally flow into that river, I mean into that ocean. I'm very sorry, my friends, to have to delude to change this for you, but it is a delusion. That is not the way it happens. You do not. It is almost as if you have to picture this great moving river of consciousness as the cosmic wheel itself, and it simply goes in upon itself over and over in endless cycles, in endless cycles. Now, on the upswing, perhaps closer to what you might call happiness and joy. But understand that at its pinnacle, when happiness and joy and beauty in the human sense are in balance, know what will follow, which is that the disillusion must fall and must come on itself, and it will fall into another cycle of darkness. And this is true of the movements of mankind. I know that those of you living now would like to think that somehow you are in a more exalted state of awareness, and we will not argue this. The point is that if that is your observation, by all means, go ahead with it. I will only say that my observation is that humanity has had many, many thousands of years to make considerable moves in awareness and love and peace, and quite frankly, if you will look at just simply your own century, I do not think you will find that that is a valid statement, that this is so. Egos will always war one with the other until they know that they are each other and that there is no separation. Up until that time, I think very clearly that you can look for a lot of disharmony between egos. It is an irrelevant point to say, is mankind moving towards some kind of an ultimate perfection, because what does that have to do with you today? If you choose to devote your life to this goal that may be, first of all, may never occur and may not have been meant to occur, and second, if it was meant to occur, will happen in such a cosmic time that you have very little to do with it, if anything, then if you can understand that those are the ground rules and continue to want to stay with this idea of changing of the currents of the river, then of course by all means go ahead. But I must point to you to pay close attention to what is really happening in your life and in those around you. If you really wish to help, then I would suggest that the best help you can have, that you can give rather to others, is to know that you can free yourself and leave a pathway, as minute as it might be, to show others the way out of the river. So to go back to the view of the river as endlessly upon itself, going endlessly on its own course and going literally nowhere, when you finally observe that this is the case, and you know that you are bound on a journey that is simply going nowhere, then you will become very determined to get out of that river and to find yourself another firm grounding. Now, what usually happens is that people decide that they don't like the part of the river they're in and they really want to move to another part of the river, and so they just take another tributary, which in its way also ends itself back into the river. So, understanding this, clearly knowing that this is a possibility, I would ask you to observe your own understanding of your life and how it moves. If you see clearly that I'm speaking truth, or even begin to see unclearly with a glimmer that I am speaking truth, then we can begin to do our work, which means that I would tell you now that there is a way, and in fact there are many ways, and that's all really religion started out to be, ways to remove yourself from this ever-moving current and stand upon the bank and take on a different life entirely, because you would understand, and I think the analogy would hold, that you would see there's a great difference in life of one standing on the bank of the river and one immersed in the moving eddies of the stream itself. I think this is a consciously obvious perception. All right. Now, again, I say, those of you who find what I say is repulsive, then I would say by all means don't listen anymore, simply go ahead with your life. Try and find meaning in the particles of the water and see if you can't come to some kind of understanding of that. But basically, I think you are picking the more difficult route, which is that out of this watery life that you have chosen, that somehow from that perception, as you constantly try to move within the river, at the same time you're trying to make meaning of it. And in a sense, I would say that you're too close to it. You can't make sense of something when you are so immersed in it that you think you are it, and that there is no way of observing. For example, the obvious analogy is if you could take part of the water and take it under observation, in a laboratory, you would understand the makeup of water. You're not going to understand as much about it if you're just simply immersed in it, swimming with it, and do not have the time or the space or the distance from it to do any work with it. You're simply in it all the time, and you seem to feel that you are compelled to move in the rhythms of that river. And of course you are not, and this is all that religions really are, is that process which carries you from the movements of the tides of the river onto the solid bank and ground you in another form of understanding. So, again I say, the best way, the quickest way, the most expedient way, is to understand that as you move in the river, you cannot understand it. That you can understand parts and particles of it. You'll have access to small pockets of understanding. And there will be a certain validity running through the river, because after all, in its deepest essence, the river is not separated from the one God. So you can, by staying immersed in the river, come to some understanding. Yes, it is true. You can taste the water. You can feel it moving upon your skin. You can have certain understandings of it. But to basically understand your place in this whole scheme, you cannot see it from the movements of the river. You have to stand back. You have to get a distance and see the entirety of it, to see where it moves and where it ends and where it does not end, and how it keeps its repetition. You have to understand it by observing it. And it's strictly the matter of observing the stream of consciousness, which is, of course, what the river is made up of. And within the stream of consciousness, those of you who are starting to awaken, be assured that within that stream of consciousness, there are the patterns that I spoke of earlier. There are those patterns, those vortexes of energy that remain and stay within the river itself, within the stream of consciousness, that when you become aware and want to have these open up to you, by your very calling out on them, they will move into your area of awareness, and they will begin to give you the freedom and the patterns of movement that will lead to your freedom that you are seeking. And that, after all, is our job, is it not? It is simply our job to awaken people who are moving in this stream of awareness, to the consciousness, rather, to the understanding that there is something other. Now, when you begin to become deeply interested in this, then you put out what is called the call, and you can call it whatever you want. Actually, what it really is that you have decided that of all of the possibilities of the movements of this stream of consciousness, that it is that particular reservoir of understanding that you want to begin to tap. Understand that when you decide on the earth plane that you want to know something, what you are really doing as you seemingly study in it and study the books and do all of this, what you're really doing is tapping into all of the accumulated data that earth beings have been able to accumulate on that subject. And so you tap in and you begin to have that vibrational frequency move towards you, and it begins to move closer towards you, and then you begin to understand it. Now, let us say, how then do we get new thoughts, so-called new thoughts? Well, let us just say that you have decided in the realm of science that you are going to come to certain understandings. Well, as I've told you before, a great deal of what has gone on is simply old. It is simply things that have come into being in the past, and are still there in the vast sea and you river, and you are there only picking up on those various particles of it and bringing them into a new form. But what also often happens is that you will pull to you strand A and strand X that both exist, and you will put A and X together in some kind of a new formation, and they will seem to have a new form, a new life, and you will become all excited. Now you have come to understand something deep and important about the earth plane, and these are called the great discoveries of the ages. Well, in fact, they will go on as AX now combined rather than A and X separately. And in another created lifetime, another person, perhaps even your own self, will come into the desire to work with that. And you will find that you are combining AX now with Y and B of the strands that exist, and a new form takes shape. And this is pretty much what you do as earthlings, is you take these various bands and strands of available opportunities of creation, and you put them in different combinations. You bring new things into form. You look on them with great delight and joy and self-satisfaction of what you've created. And then you go on dropping that interest and move to something else, and that stays as a created form for a while. And if others become very interested in it, as they do in certain things that man creates, then a lot of people will put a great deal of energy into that you have created, and in doing so give it a lot more strength, a lot more power, and it will have a longer life. Do you understand that it is your energy, it is the interest of the peoples on the earth plane that give some of these ideas much more power, and therefore those that have more power impinge more readily on man's so-called psyche. And what that really means is that those ideas in the river of consciousness have much more attraction and pull, not because they're any better, but they simply have more power behind them. And therefore, you'll find more people on the earth plane are interested in them, believe in them, and in the believing of them, of course, give them much stronger action and they will live longer, and then they will live, you have a great deal longer life. And this is how many so-called important events of history, the important ideas of history, have kept going. It's simply that in every lifetime, they have their own power, and they are therefore important, and people move toward them when they move into certain given areas. But I would like to go back to an analogy that I started a long time ago, which is that of the muddy swimming pool and the swimming up and down and the repetition and the sameness and the grayness of the water, if you will recall this. Well, if you can take the same image out of the swimming pool and now place it in a great, vast river that goes nowhere, that simply bends back upon itself and then feeds its same waters in from the ending, so-called ending, to the now beginning of this cycle of river, and going on endlessly and endlessly, hurling around, moving now by its own velocity, moving by its own powers, just by its own movement. It moves by movement. It doesn't move by any kind of divine energies. It simply continues to move by its own velocity, or whatever it would be, its own momentum keeps it moving. Now, that is what I would call this wonderful thing that you call human understanding. Now, a very dismal picture, I would admit, but the reason that it is really not dismal is that as you really come into that understanding of what I am saying, and if you would just look at your own life and ask yourself, if you have really created anything of any lasting contribution, is there anything in your lifetime that you have really done that really has made all that much difference? Have you really done anything that you think is so worthy of going on through the eons of time? And if you come up with something, well, then you are indeed, that's wonderful. That's wonderful. But I think most of you, in fact all of you, if you're being honest, will realize that you haven't come up with anything, that all of your movements of these bands of energies one way or another have only created forms that are pleasing for the moment. But yet, even in the moment, you will find others who will look on your created newness of energies and say, I find no meaning in that. There is nothing that you have created that you can call eternal, and something that all humans who look upon it will find it to be good and true and beautiful. And this is because, of course, nothing that you have used, nothing that you have done, has come from the divine source. All right, now, when you are moving in the rhythm with the divine force, what you are doing is extending. And when you are doing things from the level of the ego, it is called the projection. And when you are immersed in these two, if you're paying attention, I think you will easily be able to tell the difference.
There will be a gap in the transmission at this point. Please stand by.
Power in motion, we would call it extension. When it is the human situation, we would call it projection, which means it's simply that. You take it through your apparatus and you project it out, and you keep projecting it in such a way that other people will, on the earth plane, will see it and make sense of it with their sensory perception. So much of your knowledge, my friends, is really grounded in that part of awareness of your mind, which is called the sensual. You see things, you understand things, things come into meaning through your senses. If they do not have an appeal to your senses, it is extremely difficult to get your attention. And this is why we have to make use of the senses in the beginning of our bid for freedom. But in speaking now of extension in the divine sense, what you have to do, if you really want to be free of this, is to become aware that there are bridges made between this flow of the river and the bank upon which you will get a different perception. And there are many of these bridges, and I've tried to present some to you, and if you will just pay the slightest attention to any of the great avatars who have come to the earth, they have all given a bridge, a way across, a bridge for crossing from that turbulence to the serenity and the groundedness and the peace of the banks. You can use any of them you want. I have suggested several. One, of course, is mantram. Why? Because mantram becomes that bridge that can give you the equilibrium to move out of what you are into. I have used the use of space. There are so many. There are so many techniques, and pick whichever one you want. But understand this. Understand this, please. And this is the part that, of course, continues to delude you and therefore keeps you somewhat entrapped. There is a certain divineness to be found in the river. There is a certain amount of divineness in that river, in that the substance that is being used to make all these formulations is in some way a part of the source and the substance of the one createdness. And it is this that can, continues to delude you into thinking that this is the reality and that one can only stay in the river and will somehow find its own freedom. Now, when you finally decide that you do not want this movement to continue to buffet you around in your lifetime, when you see that peace is really what you seek, and you make the effort, all of those who have, you see, if you could only see it, if we're going to continue our analogy, you could see not only, in an essence, one would say, well, why can't I use someone else's bridge that has already been built? And unfortunately, since you are moving, ever moving, ever moving, that kind of saving is not possible. You know, you cannot crawl and find your way to another bridge and just make your way across. That is not the possibility. But what is always possible, and what I would really have really come today to remind you, is that just as you are responsible for creating this vast river, there's also a part of you that, by the grace of the divine, has already built, if you will, the substance with which you can remove yourself from the eddies of this river. Now, this is not such a desperate situation. It is really not a desperate situation at all. It is simply that you haven't opened your eyes, that you haven't looked. Because if you had opened your eyes again and seen that you were in this river, then at the same time your vision would fall on the vastness of the sky above and on the green and beauty and solidity of the banks surrounding you. All of this that you seek is so close. It is really already a part of you. It is not something that you have to create. And this is what I would like to point out. You do not have to create the bank of the river in order for it to be there. It is already there. It is you. It is a part of you that you have forgotten and that you have ceased to identify with. There was a time when you stood strong and firm on the bank of the river and simply as a creation of joy and of interest have created this flow of divine, of human consciousness. And it is that state of awareness that we now ask you to go back to. It is as if you were to make the analogy of what I have spoken of before, which is that as you stand on the bank, you see that mind and body are in you. Because what you are is not only the if you could see a bank of a river, it also extends under the river, does it not? I mean, it doesn't somehow end and then the river begins. The banks, the solidity, the earthness of that surround the banks of the river go under it for deep, deep, deep and meaningful layers of existence go down under that river and hold that river somehow within itself. And of course you are also the vastness of the sky that moves above that and the vastness that extends throughout that. So if you could see this, that the movement of the stream of consciousness is something that flows within you. And if you could get this kind of feeling that as you are moving in the river, so are you also a part of this great bank, this great earth feeling that surrounds it all, and that really what we are asking you to do is to take your attention off the movements of the river and begin to identify with that which you already are, which is that which through which the river runs, which is, of course, the great vast earth that is under it and around it at all times. And you are also, of course, to identify with the vastness of the eternal space that reaches out to the cosmic ends. You see, it's just a matter of choosing which you are going to identify with. For those of you that imagery is important, I would ask you to give thought to what I've just said, that if you can pay attention closely enough, you will find that what I speak of just being in that state of being, that is what I mean. Be in that state of being of that solid, never moving, always supportive role of the earth, of the solidity of the riverbank and the solidity of the entire world, instead of the ever-moving, ever-flowing, changing, undulating rivers that move over the earth. And if you can begin to think of yourself and feel yourself in this way, I think you will begin to become free. Because, you know, the deceptive thing about saying that you have to build a bridge, which is why I've decided that that is probably not a very good analogy for those of you in the earth plane, is the minute I say that, you think in terms of having to create something new, don't you?
Yes,
and this is, of course, I see instantly that this is not a very helpful idea. Because once I tell you you have to build something, then somehow you're going to think in terms of having to create new tools, new ideas, and this could take you forever. And so what really is necessary is to not think in terms of building bridges, which is a human way of getting out of things, but rather allowing the movement of the river to go ahead on its own. And instead, to begin to identify. Now, how then do you identify? Well, the tools are the same. You know, those of you who really are too engrossed in the river to be able to feel the peace of the earthbed, then you will need to do something to move your attention. And that is what all the tools are for. They're simply techniques of moving your awareness from the movement of the water to the solidity of the banks. And this is simply what you need to do. And again I say, the best way to do this, the best way to convince yourself of the need to do this is to be the observer of the movements of that river. And as I say again, if the river still holds your attention, then go ahead with it. There's nothing to be done, just go on with it. But those of you who really are tired of it, who really do view the river and see that each particle, although it may be this one has green, white, and red colors reflected in it, and the next one is blue, orange, and purple, those of you who really see that this is all a sameness and that there is nothing that is really important in the coming together of those particles, that you simply have these particles coming together, but in their essence they are simply more of the same thing, and the river continues on its own, and very little, if anything, continues to become better and better. In fact, if you find that at the end you have just created things that really are new combinations of old ideas, then you are the ones who are going to really want to make a bid for freedom. Are there any questions?
Bartholomew, would you speak a little more about the deception that we can get into of feeling at some point that we are moving out of the river, that we're becoming spiritual and better people and helping others and so forth, when really we're just shifting our focus of interest in the river?
Yes, well, of course, this is the most deceptive part of all of this so-called spiritual work, which is that you can get yourself into very lofty ideas and thinking that indeed you are standing outside, and when in reality you're simply more and more in it. Now, how then do you tell? Let us say that you're the normal spiritual aspirant and that you have come across a path, what you hope is a spiritual path, and you have faith in it, and you begin to work with it. And if you find that as you work with it, you know, if you begin the so-called austerities, if you begin to clean up your diet and clean up your life, and you cease doing certain things and begin doing certain other things, and you begin feeling so good about all this, and you really start to see that you really have a calling in this particular way, how can you be aware of the fact that you are simply moving now in another part of the river, which would be called the religious section of this flowing river? Because I would point out that many, many people involved in religions and so-called yogas and spiritual paths spend their entire life simply in the river. It might be a little more comfortable, and it may be that the parts that they choose to follow give them a few less bumps along the riverbank, and therefore they think somehow that they're becoming free of the river, whereas actuality would show them they've made no change at all. All right. How then to understand and recognize this? There really is, I think, only one way to really make this assessment. If you find that you are still seeing yourself as separate, special, different in any way, if you continue to identify with that part of you that sees itself as a body and as a mind working within a body, if you still observe this, however high you may have gone, understand that you are still entrapped in the movements of the stream of human consciousness. It is only when you begin to sense that you are the observer of all of that separation that you can really see that you are beginning to free yourself. Now, what of those of you who have chosen to go what I call the bhakti, which means observing that there is a divine avatar that you wish to see as your Lord, and then moving into a love of that? Well, the hallmark for knowing the success of that is if you feel that you, as a separate self, are less and less, and the power of the Lord is more and more, and indeed, when you begin to see that all persons and all events and all created things outside yourself partake of the body of that Lord. You see, what you're doing is diminishing yourself and increasing the size of your Lord. You see, this is the way the bhakti works. You become less and less and less, and the Lord becomes more and more and more. And soon, the Lord, or the idea of the Lord, takes on all form. Everyone who comes before you is part of the Lord. Everyone who speaks to you is speaking as the Lord. There is no separation. Everything you see reflects the beauty of the Lord. The Lord's presence is everywhere and in all things and at all times. And it is this to which you feel more and more drawn, not as something separate, but as a co-participant. And now your only desire is to immerse yourself in that presence and to never more see yourself as separated. And of course, the very last act of that bhakti is when you merge yourself with and see yourself only as part of the Lord and no longer look upon anything as separated and different. It is all one. All right, now that is one choice. And the other choice, of course, is to cease identifying with anything outside in a form of any kind and to keep denying any form that arises in your mind. And anything that can define itself is something that you need to say, no, not this, not this. This is the other way. You see, you have two ways. You can either go with it and everything is that, and that will appeal to a certain person, or you can go the other way and nothing that you see is that. Everything that you see is created, either in the mind or in the physical or in any form at all, you will say, no, this is not it, this is not it. And so whichever way you seem inclined is the way that you have to do it. You could either be totally immersed in it as it all being your Lord, or you can be totally uninvolved in it as the observer of all of that. And in either way, you must choose the way that seems most appealing to your inner nature. But again, we go back to your very valid question, how do you know? Well, To tell you the truth, I think people do know. It is simply that they are so fascinated with seeing themselves as getting better and better and better that, you know, they enjoy that thought, that they really lose the focus. And it's people all through the ages who have come to shaken them back to their focus, which is, as long as they see themselves as better from anyone, if you look on yourself and see yourself as better than anyone at all, no matter who, if you see yourself as separate from anyone, then know that if you have picked the bhakti, you have a long way to go. Because, you see, the very essence of Lord means Lord is everywhere. And there is no place in the created universe that your Lord will not be if you are really in a state of rapport with that. If Lord is God, and if Lord is all, then Lord is everywhere, and there cannot be any exception. And if Lord is everywhere, then Lord knows how to act and does whatever needs to be done, and you simply submit, submit, submit. You see, it's a constant submission to Lord, and everywhere it happens, Lord is speaking to you, telling you, teaching you, guiding you. Lord is everywhere. That means Lord cannot be here and not there. If Lord is, and if you really are looking on it as the cosmic one, then you must know that it's everywhere. And the problem is that so many spiritual seekers pick and choose where Lord is going to be. Well, Lord is going to be with their own group and organization. Oh, yes, by all means. But never in the organization next to it. And Lord is going to be in their own form of government. Oh, yes, but not in the so-called enemy's form of government. You see, you make all of these distinctions. And if you're making distinctions, then you have nothing really to do with Lord, because Lord is everywhere. And that should be a hallmark to you, any of you who are involved in the bhakti of the surrender. If you see anywhere in the universe, if you can see, even imagine anywhere where your Lord is not acting, even through the most hateful person in your life, even through the most hateful created creature in the history of the world, then know that you're separated from your Lord, because you must be part of everything if you're going to be a part of Lord, because Lord is all. By the same token, if anything in the world picks itself out as special to you, as being more valid, then know that you are not really involved in your job as observer. If there's anything in the createdness that you look at that gives more attention to you, that calls on you more, than any other part, then know that you are still involved in thinking that there is some part of the createdness that is more part of it than the other. You must make your choice. Either none of it in the createdness is, or it all is. And if you continue to look at name and form and say, no, no, not this, not this, I'm not that, I'm not that, but then all of a sudden something comes by and you say, oh, I think perhaps I am that. In this case, probably the deep, sincere spiritual seeker. If you still see yourself as a deep, sincere spiritual seeker, then know that you have a very strong edifice that you believe in, and that is catching you. That is now the trap that is binding you to the illusion. You know, you can see all of the debris of the world go by, and you say, oh no, I'm not that, I'm not that, and cease to identify yourself with that. But all of a sudden, if you're paying attention, you will find, oh, this one appeals to me. Do you see what I'm saying? Now this appeals to me. When someone gives you praise and glory and says, oh, how wonderful you are, and how grateful I am that you did X, Y, and Z for me, and you find yourself believing that that is what you are, and you're preening yourself and feeling very good about that, then know that you are really still believing that there is a part of this createdness of the earth that you are a part of and not separate from. So it's just a matter of keeping yourself very closely in your own mind. How are you really responding? And if you are sincere, you will see that you really are attached. I mean, all of you who are listening to this, none of you are free. There is a part of the structure that you don't say no to, that you are saying yes to, because if there weren't, you wouldn't, you know, you would be free. So find out what part of the structure you really are attached to. Is it something superfluous, or is it one of the more deep root causes, which are the ones that hold all of mankind in bondage? And as I said before, the greatest one is the illusion that you are a body, that somehow you are this body and not simply a part, that it is a part of who you really are, your vastness. Are you really part? Are you really this mind acting in body, or are you not? And it is your attraction to and hooking up with those beliefs and those ideas that move, that keep you entrapped in the illusion. So, yes, it is important that in fact, it becomes even more important when you move into the realm of spiritual seeking, that you keep your awareness very deeply attuned to what you're doing, because one of the greatest traps is that you are somehow free. But how do you know if you're free? I don't, perhaps it's that my perception is too removed from the earth plane to be helpful here. But quite frankly, I do not see how you can really be deluded, not if you're really paying attention. I don't think that you can really be deluded about how great your love is if you find anyone in the world that you do not feel that upwelling of compassion and wanting to keep in your heart. If there's anyone in the world that you do not want to place within your heart with love and cherish them, then it's
okay.
And by the same token, if there's a part of your belief structure, your intellectual structure, your idea structure, that still has an appeal to you. In other words, if you still like to see yourself in a certain way, then you would know this. You know, if you like to see yourself as a kind being who goes around bestowing understanding, peace, and joy on others, or if you like to see yourself as someone who has achieved detachment and awareness and understanding, it seems to me you would know this. You know, it seems to me that you would know this and that you would easily be able to observe this. So I would say, and of course, please correct me, any of you who think that I'm really in error here, it seems to me that the delusions are not so hard to come upon. You know, either you're loving totally, completely, at all time and in all places with all persons, or you're not. Either you are detached, the observer, aware that you are not a part of all of that, or you're not. And it seems to me it's easy enough to tell. I think what we're really saying is that there are times when we choose to not be aware of what was really going on. There are times when we get weary of the struggle, and we would just as soon immerse ourselves back in the illusion and see ourselves now as somehow still lofty, special, and wonderful, and we allow the river to move through us, and we go ahead and go along with it for a period of time. Does it not seem that is perhaps more the case?
Oh, yes.
So again, we go back to, if you're paying attention, then you know where you are. You know, this new idea of knowing where you're coming from, I think, is the vernacular I hear. Well, most of you are coming from and are going to the same thing. You're going to the source of this endless river, immersing yourself in the particles, keeping yourself going on the separation of the river movement, and are not really going anywhere, in my terminology. And the way that you can know you're not going anywhere is the more, you know, if you even get a glimpse, of where you're going, meaning if you can just get a little taste of the I am-ness of who you are, of that still, silent beingness of what you are, then you really will know. In contrast to that. And that's why I say, please, in the beginning stages, when the pull of the river is so much greater, so much stronger, it is where you have to take maximum effort, and energy has to be expended. And that's why, of course, all of the disciplines have arisen in all of the rituals of the religious world, no matter where you go. It's simply to be that which will begin to move you out of your identification, your misidentification. Are there any questions?
I feel that this is very clear, Bartholomew. Thank you.
Well, if you know, if anybody listening to this tape has any exceptions to what I've said and would like to bring them forward, by all means do. But again, beware of exceptions. You know, one of the greatest hallmarks of whether you really are dedicated is if you make exceptions, oh well, I will make an exception in this case. You know, seeing yourself in one way as being particular special, or I will make an exception in this case because this person isn't really worth loving. You know, there's something really evil about this person. Any exceptions mean speciality, and any time you see anything or anyone as special, realize that you have really not gone into the state of freedom. Just pay attention. You know, you're your own workshops, all of you, and you don't need to go very far to see how far you've gone. And of course, the best is when you no longer care how far you've gone because you realize there isn't any such thing as going anywhere. You always were that solid bank of river, that underlying earthness through which the river flows, and you sense, you feel it. You know, it's a feeling, Tone. I go back to this. You will feel it when you begin to identify with the bank, when you begin to identify with the never-changing, the ever-sameness, you'll feel it. You'll know it. And you'll know it in a detached sense that will know that all others are also in that same thing. If you ever feel that what you're experiencing is special and unique, then you haven't felt what is really the divine. Because the hallmark of the divine is its ordinariness, its everybody-ness, its always the sameness through everyone at all times-ness. You know, you're going to get that kind of a feeling. It's a naturalness. It isn't something that's sublimely different and unique and a surprise to you. It is so ordinary. It is so ordinary that you know that you have it ordinarily, and so does everyone else. And that is the real hallmark, when your unity with all come into your awareness and not your speciality. So if there are any questions, I'd be very pleased at another time to answer them. And good morning.
Thank you, Bartholomew.